I'm Dennis Tubergen. You are listening to RLA Radio. Glad you decided to tune in today. Hey, it is the month of April, which means I have a brand new special report for you. It is your guide to wills, trusts, and estate planning. You can go to requestyourreport.com to get your copy of that free report. And when you go to requestyourreport.com and request that report, I'll be very glad to send you also a copy of my best-selling book, Revenue Sourcing, that's been completely updated for 2024. I'll also send you a copy of the Little Black Book on Social Security Maximization. Now, if you're watching the news reports of late about the recently released economic data, you're likely under the impression that the economic data being reported seems a bit rosier than economic reality. In fact, in my conversations with listeners to this radio program and in conversations with clients, I've been hearing that a lot lately. Let me give you an example. Let's take the recent jobs report published by CNN. I'll give you just a bit from that article. For all intents and purposes, and by most economists' predictions, job growth was supposed to slow by now. The U.S. labor market also was supposed to weaken under the pressure of 11 interest rate hikes. Instead, on Friday, yet another jobs report defied expectations. Employers added 303,000 jobs in March, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The unemployment rate fell to 3.8% from 3.9% the month before. The CNN article writer also added that Friday's jobs report not only highlights the U.S. labor market's remarkable resilience in the face of high interest rates and elevated inflation, but it also shows that amid this enduring strength, inflation pressures are easing. Now, if you're reading that article, and I gave you just an excerpt from that article, but if you're reading that article, you'd think the economy was doing pretty well, wouldn't you? Well, undoubtedly, yes, but it's what the article doesn't say that's important. Let me give you another perspective on this story with an article from Zero Hedge. And again, I quote, "However, that's where the mitigating factors end, because while there was some improvement in the quantitative aspect of the March report, when it comes to the qualitative aspect, it was another disaster for one simple reason. All the job gains were part-time jobs. In March, the number of part-time jobs soared by 691,000 to 28.6 million, up from 27.94 million, while full-time jobs dropped by 6,000 to 132.94 million. Now, when you look at these numbers over the past year, they don't get any better. Since March of 2023, the number of full-time workers has declined by 1.35 million. At the same time, the number of part-time workers has increased by nearly 1.9 million. Let me repeat that. Over the last year, the United States has lost 1.35 million full-time workers and added 1.9 million part-time workers. But there's more to this story. All the job gains since 2018 have gone to immigrants. Well, what happened in March? Well, this rosy report, if you believe the CNN story, says that more of the same was the case. In fact, the collapse of native-born workers in the past 3 months has been astounding. 2.5 million native-born workers have lost their jobs. Now, in March, that picked up a bit. But if you go back and look at the last 6 years, if you go back to 2018, there has been zero job creation for native-born workers, and all job gains recently have been part-time workers. Full-time jobs are declining. That gives you a glimpse into what's going on in the economy. Now, when you look at the other economic data being reported, the dots start to connect. Let's look first at credit card debt, which has been steadily increasing over the past few years as inflation has accelerated. Just when you thought U.S. consumers maybe had learned their lesson and stopped buying stuff they can't afford with money they don't have, the latest consumer credit data destroys that thesis. 2 months ago, we saw credit card growth stop suddenly, but now we're seeing it increasing again. In January, credit card debt was up $19.5 billion after a decline in December. And if you look at total credit card debt today, total credit card debt was up $11.3 billion in February. The initial estimate was $8.6 billion, but that was revised to a much bigger number, $11.3 billion. Total credit card debt presently, $1.339 trillion. Now, to put that in perspective, the annual outlay for Social Security benefits is $1.35 trillion. So there is now more in credit card debt than the outlay for Social Security. At the same time, we have seen savings rates decline. If you look at the U.S. savings rate going back 10 years, the savings rate now is at an all-time low, while credit card debt is at an all-time high. Now, those statistics are consistent with part-time work for many Americans. It simply tells you that Americans are putting expenses on credit cards that they don't have money to pay. Now, in another development that shed some light on the real economy, a chain of popular dollar stores has decided to close all its locations. After 4 decades in business, after 40 years in business, 99 cents only stores will close all its doors permanently. The retail chain announced it would close all 371 locations this past week. Now, the CEO of the company said this was an extremely difficult decision. It's not the outcome we had expected or hoped to achieve. Unfortunately, the last several years have presented significant and lasting challenges in the retail environment. The company decided the best way to preserve value for shareholders would be to close all locations. The CEO made another statement that was a bit telling. It seems a couple of the big reasons for the closure of these stores is inflation and unprosecuted theft. And finally this week, one of the largest U.S. banks issued a statement that's really rather remarkable when you think about it. Bank of America stated a fiscal crisis is imminent. The CEO of Bank of America, Brian Moynihan, and the vice dean of Wharton, a gentleman by the name of Joe Gomes, warned that there is a fiscal crisis that is imminent due to escalating U.S. debt. The two called for prioritizing debt payments, tightening fiscal policies, and fundamental change in government budget management. Do you all listening to this think that is likely to happen? While we're all inherently aware that significant belt tightening may make the ultimate fiscal crisis slightly more bearable, slightly less painful, most of us are not expecting any such thing from the collective group of politicians in Washington. We're only debating the when of the inevitable fiscal crisis. I would encourage you to get more information. You can do that by visiting the website requestyourreport.com. The website, again, is requestyourreport.com. When you visit that website, I will send you this month's special report, which has to do with, should you have a will? Should you have a trust? How can you avoid probate? A will is guaranteed probate. Does a trust guarantee that you'll avoid probate? Not necessarily. You'll get details in the report. And when you request that report again by visiting requestyourreport.com, you'll also get a copy of my revenue sourcing book. The revenue sourcing book contains a retirement planning strategy for the post-pandemic economy. If you have not yet gotten your copy of the revenue sourcing book completely updated now for 2024, I would encourage you to do so. Again, requestyourreport.com gets you the estate planning report. It gets you the revenue sourcing book. It will also get you my little black book on Social Security maximization. If you are trying to figure out when you want to collect Social Security, this book is must reading. If you're already collecting Social Security, it also contains some minimization strategies as far as taxes are concerned. The current tax code does sunset December 31 of 2025, and there are some planning strategies that have come about as a result of the Secure Act and the CARES Act that are now available to you. So if you've not looked at how to reduce taxes on your Social Security, you'll get that book as part of this month's special package as well. Again, go to requestyourreport.com. I'll be glad to send you all that information absolutely free and with no further obligation. I'll be back after these words with my special guest, Mr. Simon Popple. Stay with us. Welcome back to RLA Radio. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. Joining me once again on today's program is returning guest, Mr. Simon Popple. Simon's website is www.goldprogram.co.uk. That's www.goldprogram.co.uk. There's a lot of free newsletters, a lot of free reports there. And there is a book there that is remarkably inexpensive. I'd also recommend you pick up. Simon, welcome back to the program.
Great to be here.
So, Simon, for our listeners maybe that aren't familiar with you and your background, could you just provide a little bit of your professional experience? How did you end up getting to where you are now?
Okay, well, I mean, I took, I suppose, quite a well-trodden route, the MBA, investment banking. I then went into property, did well there. I was the youngest director of one of the world's largest private property companies. But I kind of figured that, you know, everything's got cycles. And even though I left the property cycle early, I'm very glad I did, because I think commodities have got a fantastic future, particularly gold. And so I started investing in them. The investments went very well. I got asked to write a letter for Money Week, which is a kind of UK publication. And then they're owned by Agora Financial. So when they were sold, Agora kept me on, and I wrote the sort of European newsletter for them called Gold Speculator. And yeah, I mean, basically, you know, the sector has been very kind to me. I've done very well with my investments. It made a lot of money for me and other people. And so, you know, basically what I'm doing is trying to help people invest in a sector that's bizarrely been around for thousands of years, but very few people have any exposure to it.
Well, Simon, thank you for that. Given your background, you mentioned you had some background in banking. What's your take on the health of the banking sector at this point?
Well, I mean, the thing is, banks up until now have always been able to kind of lean on the central banks who print money. So, you know, whatever you owe, they can kind of create the money out of thin air, which is, in all honesty, it's worked very well. But you know, one of the things I like about commodities and gold in particular is, you know, you can't print them. And I think that at some point, there will be some genuine pain in the system. And although the system will print to try and alleviate that pain, I think that people will want something that's tangible. And there aren't many tangible assets out there. But gold and commodities are tangible. That, you know, they're real things. And I think at the end of the day, people will like to be investing in something that's real rather than, you know, that can be changed at the click of a button.
So, Simon, when you talk about commodities, you talk about gold, you talk about silver, you know, copper has been looking pretty good of late. Do you have a favorite among the commodities?
Well, I mean, I like all the ones you've mentioned. I would probably add uranium to that and nickel. But I suppose if I have a favorite, it's gold. But I'm a great believer in diversity. And so I think you should have a bit of everything. And, you know, if you're going to have more of anything, I'd, you know, I personally like gold. But I'd start off by having a bit of everything, and then you know, if you've got enough money left over after that, then perhaps get a bit more gold. But I think having a diverse approach to commodities, you know, makes a huge amount of sense.
Simon, historically, when you study the relationship between how stocks perform and how commodities perform, from the research I've done, the reading I've done, they seem to be inversely correlated. So if you're bullish on commodities, does that make you bearish on stocks?
Well, in a way, yes. I mean, you know, what I like about commodities is they are, you know, especially gold, you know, it's often viewed as an inflation hedge. And I think that there, whilst there is some truth in that, people need to be a bit careful because there are times when inflation's gone up and gold's gone down. But one of the things that caught my eye recently was looking at debt and gold, and there seems to be a relationship over the longer period between debt and gold. And, you know, as debt goes up, the gold price goes up. And so I think that, you know, a lot of people have done very well out of equities, don't get me wrong, and you can still get gold equities, but I would be inclined to have at least some of my capital in gold and gold equities, because if other equities, you know, head south, then it's nice to have got some diversification.
Simon, you mentioned when debt goes up, gold typically goes up. I found that to be an interesting comment. The first thing I thought of when you said that is that when debt gets to a certain point, particularly when, you know, debt on the balance sheet of governments gets too high, central banks tend to try to paper over the problem. Certainly, we've seen that to a great extent here over the past few years. Is that the heart, really, of this correlation?
Yeah, in a way it is, I think. I mean, central banks have been buying a lot of gold, as you know. And, you know, we're told inflation is coming down, is under control. But from a personal perspective, you know, if I go shopping or go and fill up the car, the level of inflation that I'm told is in the economy bears no resemblance to my own personal level of inflation. Now, I think you can kind of run that policy for a while, but after a while, it catches up with you. Just, you know, by way of a very simple example, if you lend me $100 and you say, right, Simon, I'm going to charge you 10%. So in a year, you get $110 back. Now, if the $100 that you lend me today, you know, you could buy your 10 favorite bottles of wine. But in a year's time, with the $110 that you get back, you can only buy 9. You know, that's a strategy that doesn't, you know, you can do it for a year, maybe a bit longer, but after a while, it catches up with you. And if I want to borrow money again off you, you'll probably say, well, it's not 10%, it's 20%, because I want to buy my nice bottles of wine again. And by the way, it's probably 25% because I want to get that bottle I missed back. So, you know, I think that, you know, you need to be careful about working out your own personal level of inflation, because that may be different to the headline rate you're told about. And I think that's particularly important on a number of levels. Just, you know, for example, if you get a pay rise and, you know, we're told, let's say the level of inflation is running at, let's say, 3%, and you're given a 6% pay rise, your boss probably thinks he's doing you a bit of a favor, because, you know, you've got the 3% plus 3% for, you know, for working well. But if your personal level of inflation is at 6%, they're not actually doing you any favors at all. All they're doing is keeping your pay at the same level as you had last year. So I think it is worth working out what your own level of inflation is. And the easiest way to do that, really, is to look at what you spend most of your money on, and see, you know, whether or not it's going up in price.
Well, Simon, certainly using the bottle of wine as an example is an analogy that many of our listeners, I'm sure, can relate to. So I thought I would comment on that. Let me ask you, what is Simon Popple's forecast for inflation moving ahead? When I look at the March numbers that just came out, they were hotter than expected, and that is the official headline rate of inflation. As you correctly pointed out, that's not really the inflation that any of us are experiencing. We're experiencing a much higher rate of inflation. So where do you think inflation goes here over the course of the rest of 2024?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think a lot depends on, how you spend your money and things like that. But I mean, for me, food prices are, I'd say, double digits. I must say, I haven't really kept a price, sorry, a keen eye on energy prices, but it'd be no surprise to me if they were sort of at least close to double digits. And so I think that the inflation genie does need to be put back in the bottle. And what particularly scares me is, the talk of interest rate cuts. Now, if you've got inflation and interest rate cuts, the inflation ain't going to get any better. It's going to get worse. And so I think that people do need to sort of think about inflation a lot more now than perhaps they used to. And I think that's a big problem for investors, because in the past, I'll give you another example. There's people who, let's say, put money in the bank, and they inflation was running at, let's say, 1.5%, and they got 2% interest from the bank, and they were sort of bitching and moaning about it, but they're actually making 50 basis points. But if the bank is now paying you, let's say, 7%, but inflation's running at 8%, you're actually losing 100 basis points, but people actually feel wealthier because they've got more money. Now, I think it's going to take a while for that to sort of sink in, but I think that people do need to be really cognizant of what their own level of inflation is. And it may be that, that's the headline, or maybe even lower than the headline, which is great if that's the case. But I think for a lot of people, it could be higher. And if it is higher, they need to make sure their investments sort of align with their level of inflation, because if they don't, they're losing money.
Simon, we have about a minute left in this segment. If our listeners go to www.goldprogram.co.uk, what will they find there, and why should they go there?
Well, basically, there's a whole load of free stuff. I put some free newsletters out that kind of explains what's in my book and how I invest. There's some reports which I think people will find useful. All this is free. And if they decide that gold is for them, they may want to buy the book. And I've got a squad in there where I actually select companies which that I choose from, which people I think will find very helpful. But there's loads of free stuff. So if people really want to kind of get on the journey, even if they don't do anything, just to kind of monitor what's happening, then I think that's a step in the right direction.
Well, my guest today is Mr. Simon Popple. The website again is www.goldprogram.co.uk. Go check it out. I'll continue my conversation with Simon when RLA Radio returns. Stay with us. I'm Dennis Teubergen. You're listening to RLA Radio. I have the pleasure of chatting today with returning guest, Mr. Simon Popple. Simon's website is www.goldprogram.co.uk. Lots of free resources there, as well as a buyer's guide to gold book. I'd encourage you to check that out. Simon, in the last segment, you mentioned that the talk of central bank interest rate cuts worries you because that will likely feed inflation. Where do you think central banks go for the rest of the year? Here in the U.S., we've got an election coming up. Certainly, when you look at the party in power, there's going to be a lot of political pressure on the Fed to ease, to make things maybe seem favorable economically speaking. What do you think happens here with central bank policy for the rest of the year?
Well, I think it's very interesting, because I think if they are going to cut rates, they probably need to cut them in the next few months, because if they don't do anything until September, October, when the election is in sort of full swing, they don't want to be viewed as politically aligning themselves with anyone. And so I think it makes it difficult to cut in those months. So I think that if we do get cuts, it would be no surprise to me if it's more June, July. And then perhaps when the election's taken place and there's a new president, there'll be further cuts. But I think It's certainly something that people need to bear in mind, that it'll be difficult to make these cuts during the election process.
Simon, I have made a forecast here on the program that, you know, listening to a lot of very bright people like yourself give their opinions as to where things are going, that, you know, I think we're headed for what I would consider to be a stagflationary outcome, that inflation will continue, perhaps even accelerate for, you know, some of the examples you gave in the first segment. And at the same time, we'll have economic contraction. In fact, I think there's an argument to be made here in the U.S. that if it wasn't for U.S. government deficit spending, we would already be in a recession. Do you agree with that forecast of stagflation, or do you not, and why?
Yeah, unfortunately, I do. And in, what I'd add to that, Dennis, is you and I can't control stagflation. You know, whatever the economy does, it does. But what we can control is what we invest in. And I would urge people to try and deal with what they can control rather than worry about what they can't control. And, you know, what they can control is what they invest in. And I think a lot of people have got no investment in commodities. And I just think it makes sense to have some. You know, I'm not a believer that you should put all your money in anything. But I think just having a diversified portfolio with some of your money in commodities, in different types of commodities, in different ways. You know, you may have some physical gold, you may have some uranium equities, you may have a copper ETF, I don't know. But what I'm saying is I think it makes sense to diversify in a number of different ways. So if the market does go against you, then you've got more chance of having some investments that are, you know, holding up quite well.
So, Simon, you mentioned gold, you mentioned silver, you mentioned, you know, uranium, copper. We've talked about those. Feel free to add to any of those commodity assets as you see fit. Almost all of those commodities, one can invest in an ETF that tracks the price of the commodity. You can also invest in the real stuff. How do you prefer to invest in commodities?
Personally, I like to have the real stuff because although ETFs can be very efficient in an efficient market, if there's any issues with the market, let's say, you know, another Lehman type event, you know, God hope it doesn't happen. But you know, what I like about, you know, the equities and owning the physical is you've got generally two sides to the deal. You've got you and, you know, the other, you know, the company that stores and insures the gold or the company that is producing the gold. As soon as you bring an ETF into it, you know, there's lots of links in the chain. And if they all function, that's great. But if you've got a problem with one of the links, then you know, you've got a real problem. And so personally, and it's very much a personal choice, I prefer to have the physical. And, I know that some ETFs say, oh, well, you know, if you invest with us, then, you know, it's backed by physical. But in a lot of cases, you can't actually get your hands on the physical. So if that's what they're saying, then I would say to them, well, look, you know, could I have the physical if I needed it? And if they say yes, fantastic. But if they say no, I'd be, you know, a little bit concerned.
Simon, I'd like to go back and revisit real estate here for just a moment. When you look at the commercial real estate market, seems that it is collapsing, kind of collapsing in slow motion is how I see it. We have a Canadian pension fund that just sold their interest in a Manhattan office building for a dollar. It's the old, hey, give me a dollar and take over payments. You can own the office building. The tallest building in Brooklyn, New York is now going to a foreclosure auction in June. There's about $1 trillion in commercial real estate loans that are going to be refinanced here over the next 9 months here in the U.S. Seems like this collapse in commercial real estate is going to have to continue. Do you think it'll get legs to the rest of the real estate market? And when looking at investing in things that they can't print, to quote you from the first segment, that you should avoid real estate? Or what's your take there?
Well, I think the real estate is an interesting market because it's what I describe as a very local market. You know, property in New York is important if you want to live in and around New York. But if you don't want to live in and around New York, it's kind of irrelevant. And, you know, one of the things I like about gold is it's, you know, it's location agnostic. You know, if you've got gold, it's worth the same amount in you know, South Africa as it is in the UK, as in the US. So I think that I think there's a very you know, real estate is an interesting area, and it does worry me, particularly commercial. I'm less worried about residential because there's so many people wanting real estate. You know, the demand is very high. I think that the residential market, whilst it may suffer, I think it will hold up better than most. But the commercial real estate market, I think I am genuinely concerned about it because, you know, especially with more people working from home and companies becoming a lot more savvy about technology and things like that, the demand for some of this real estate is literally evaporating. And, you know, if you paid hundreds of millions for a building and no one wants to work in it, then, you know, it's a huge problem. So yeah, I do think the commercial real estate market is going to have some interesting times, to put it mildly.
I'm chatting today with Mr. Simon Popple. His website is www.goldprogram.co.uk. Lots of free newsletters there, lots of free reports, and an investing in gold book that is available for essentially shipping, not much money. I'd encourage you to check it all out. Again, the website, goldprogram.co.uk. Simon, do you have an opinion on cryptocurrencies? Bitcoin recently reached high levels at about the same time as gold, although there seems to be a bit of a disparity in performance as gold has continued to move up and Bitcoin has pulled back some. Ethereum has actually outperformed Bitcoin. What's Simon Popple's position when it comes to cryptocurrencies?
Well, look, if I'm honest, I don't really understand them. And if I don't understand them, I don't invest in them. I had a lovely quote from, I think it was Paulson, who said that, you know, crypto is a limited supply of nothing. And, you know, if you got in on the ground floor and, you know, you invested, you know, a few hundred dollars or perhaps even a few thousand dollars, and, you know, well done, you've done phenomenally well. But if I'm honest, paying, I don't know what it is at the moment, $70,000 for something I don't understand, it seems a lot of money to me. And I'd rather invest in gold because gold is real, it's tangible. And, you know, whereas crypto isn't, you know, if you buy your other half a crypto ring, you know, good luck with that. I think, you know, you could be in a spot of bother. I think chances are they'll want gold. It's another product, but I view the crypto market, because I don't understand it, I view it more as gambling than investing, if I'm honest. And if the price continues to go up, you know, I dare say you could do very well, but if the price crashes and then someone said to me, why did you put your money in crypto? The answer is I don't know. So I don't have any money in it.
Well, Simon, I have time for one more question. It's amazing how fast time goes by when we start having a conversation. We have the BRICS countries now in 2024, plus some oil-producing nations. Saudi Arabia is now part of BRICS. Iran, United Arab Emirates. They have been talking for the last year and a half or so about a gold-backed trade currency to replace the dollar to some extent as a reserve currency or a trading currency. What's your take on that? Do you think that will happen? And do you think that's just another reason to own gold?
I think it'll happen, but I think it could take a long time for it to happen because the dollar is such a strong currency. I think as much as anything, I think it will force the US into thinking perhaps a bit more carefully about printing money, and having a gold-backed currency. On the one hand, it'd be fantastic for people, but on the other hand, I think it would really limit your ability to expand the currency. So I think, you know, there could be some major issues for such a currency going forward. I can't see it being 100% backed, probably, you know, more like 20-30% backed by gold and other commodities. But I think the direction of travel is clear, that more people want tangible assets, and, you know, these gold-backed currencies. But I think the speed of travel is less clear. And so, the answer is yes. I like the idea of having gold, but it's for a variety of reasons, and not one specific reason such as that.
Well, the clock says we have to leave it there. My guest today has been Mr. Simon Poppel. His website is www.goldprogram.co.uk. I'd encourage you to check it out. Simon, thank you for joining us today. I always get great response from the listeners when you're on the program, and love to have you back down the road.
That's great. We really enjoyed it, and look forward to catching up with you soon.
We will return after these words. Welcome back to RLA Radio. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. Thanks again to my special guest today, Mr. Simon Poppel, for joining us on today's program. You know, if you take a look at what the stock market has done since October of last year, you'd think things were clicking along pretty well. And in fact, in the stock market, they have been. Since October, when you look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average, stocks are up between 23 and 25%. And when you look at the S&P 500, stocks have rallied about 27%. Now, those are incredibly rapid rises on a percentage basis. And if you're an investor, you'd be smart to ask the question, what is driving these gains over a time frame of less than 6 months? I mean, think about it. On an annualized basis, we're talking 50% gains, which rarely happens. Well, according to FactSet data, companies in the S&P 500 saw earnings grow 4.3% during the fourth quarter of 2023 from the prior year. Now, that is good earnings growth, but I thought in this segment, particularly for those of you that are stock investors, I would break it down for you a bit. The current PE ratio, or price earnings ratio, of the S&P 500 is about 28.5. Now, if you're a stock investor, that is probably not a new term for you, but let me just assume you don't know what that is. A PE ratio is a price earnings ratio. Very simply stated, the PE ratio tells you what you pay for a stock share and what you get back in earnings. So if there's a PE ratio of about 28.5, it means you spend $28.50 for a share of stock that pays you back a dollar in earnings. Now, on a percentage basis, that's about a 3.5% return on investment. You spend $28.52, you get back a dollar in earnings. That's the 3.5% return. Now that we've done the math, now that you're armed with that information, let me ask you a question. Would you rather put your money in stocks and get a 3.5% return on average, or would you prefer to own a fixed interest investment that pays you 5% plus and has zero stock market risk? Now, I realize that that question is probably overly simplistic, because when you invest in stocks, you're looking for some growth. But historically speaking, when the yield on fixed interest investments greatly exceeds the dividend yield in stocks, you get investors that begin to move out of stocks. So when you look at stocks from that perspective, you have to conclude that they are overvalued. Now let's check out another stock valuation tool. If you've been a longtime listener to RLA Radio, you know that I occasionally talk about the Buffett Indicator. Now, the Buffett Indicator is named for famed investor Warren Buffett, who commented in an interview that it was his favorite stock valuation tool. So how does the Buffett Indicator work? Well, the Buffett Indicator is really a fraction, with the numerator or top number of the fraction being market capitalization, the total value of all stocks. And the numerator or bottom number of the fraction is economic output or gross domestic product. Now, I can't show you a chart of the Buffett Indicator on the radio, but right now, when you take the total value of stocks, when you take market capitalization, and you divide by economic output, you get a number of 166%. Now, at the time of the tech stock bubble unwinding back around the turn of the century, back in 2000, the Buffett Indicator read about 162%. So right now, using the Buffett Indicator as the metric, we have stocks that are more overvalued than at the time the tech stock bubble began to unwind. In fact, stocks have only really been valued using the Buffett Indicator higher than this at one other point, and it was the end of 2021, and we all know what happened in 2022. Stock prices declined. The second thing you notice when you look at the Buffett Indicator is that even though stock prices are higher recently, the indicator has fallen, which means economic growth has not kept pace with stock price growth. Now, this should be a huge red flag for stock investors, given what I discussed recently on a program. Now, let me remind you what I talked about. I reported to you that in the fourth quarter of 2023, the U.S. economy grew by $334 billion. That's a pretty healthy growth rate. However, when you dig into the numbers, you see that government debt in the fourth quarter of 2023 increased by $834 billion. That means the government borrowed $2.50 for every $1 of economic growth in the U.S. economy. You've got to borrow or go in debt $2.50 to get a dollar's worth of growth. That, my friends, is not growth. So that means stocks, in my view, and using these two metrics at this point in time, are extremely overvalued. Now, that does not mean that a stock market crash is imminent. High stock prices could continue for a while, but you'd have to agree there's probably a lot more downside risk in stocks than upside growth potential. And I have one more thing to point out to you. If you are approaching retirement, forget about comparing the return of your portfolio to that of a benchmark like the S&P 500. If you outperform the benchmark, but the benchmark's negative, that just means you lose less money than the benchmark. If you're retired or close to being retired, you should think about having absolute returns and preservation of capital be your desired outcome. And to that end, I'd like to invite you to get this month's report and all the supporting information. You can go to requestyourreport.com and I'll be glad to send it to you absolutely free. Again, that's requestyourreport.com. That's all the time I have for this week. I'll be back again next week. Thanks for tuning in.